So this is the last day of the retreat, and we reflect on the way things are, what comes together must separate. And just simple reflections like that help the insight process. And so then when we begin a retreat, it's like this, you know, you have this time ahead of you under these kind of conditions. And the ending, last day of a retreat, the ending of a retreat is like this. And so then, you know, I'm not telling you what it's like, but you know how you're actually feeling, and just this perception of the last day, end of the retreat, return home. And just reinforcing this, trying to encourage people to have more confidence in this kind of knowing, non-critical knowing. It's just knowing that it's like this. For example, you can't help the way you're feeling right now. You don't ask to feel a certain way, but the conditions around you, your own character tendencies, karma and whatnot. But there's the knowing. It's like this, and this is a reflective practice rather than a definitive one. It's not analytical. It's not rational. It's a direct knowing. The thinking process is we tend to want to know through perceptions, through concepts. Nothing is real for us unless we can define and have a name for it. So we give objects names, and we have words that describe abstractions, feelings. But feeling themselves, like emotional feeling or mood, mental state that you're experiencing right now, is not a word. It's a reality of, it is the way it is. And your awareness of it, then you're changing from the grasping of your mood, your mental state, to proliferating on it or trying to get rid of it, to embracing it, allowing it to be what it is, because your refuge is in the knowing of it. It is what it is, and then you're aware of the nature of sankhara, conditions, phenomena, is that all sankharas are impermanent, all conditions are impermanent. Now this kind of practice is, at first it tends to be, you know, mainly quite just doing it, you know, observing, learning to trust yourself more. Eventually you get really profound insight from it. Something shifts from the trying efforts and personal attitudes about meditation to being this knowing itself, rather than a personality that's trying to know or understand Dhamma. Sometimes in questions and answers sessions, people want me to explain things that you know, that you can't you can only go so far explaining, and then you have to just do it. And if, how do you do it? You know, what do I do to be mindful? It's not, you know, it's a question you that has no answer, because it's a simple act of being mindful rather than doing something to become mindful. Becoming is based on ignorance, you know, so you want to become something. How many of you, you know, we tend to see ourselves through a critical mind. We oftentimes see ourselves as flawed, as inadequate, as defiled, or we tend to, maybe some people, I mean, different character tendencies in people, but many that I encounter on meditation retreats are very critical of themselves. They kind of exaggerate their faults. It's like taking just the smudge on a painting and only looking at that, so you don't see the whole of the painting. You just see the flaw. And where the attitude of vipassana is, of insight meditation, is opening up to the whole painting, rather than just being obsessed with the flaw or the defect in the painting. No, there's different methods. Teachers teach and have different methods and techniques they use. And it's not about one being better than the other. It's not about, it's how wisely do you use a technique? Because even the best technique, if grasped with ignorance, will lead to suffering. So it's this awakened Puto style that I found most effective for myself. And this was very much the teaching of Lungpo Cha when I first encountered him, when I first met him, was that this mantra Puto really impressed me, because I was still trying to figure out what is it that knows if there's no self, you know, what, and there's still a sense of subject object in the relationship of consciousness. And and in experience, you know, so the subject's here, and the objects are out there. And so that, what is that, a self, or what a name for it, you know, like, is it the higher self, or the ultimate self, or in some way the word self seemed to always be necessary. And then the Puto mantra. And this is very commonly taught. Lungpu Man, people like that, Ajahn Mahabua, these famous forest Ajahns, used this. And of course, they translated Puto into Thai as Puru, it's which is the one knowing, that knowing. But it's not personal anymore. It's not a self in terms of a separate self. It's the function of consciousness is knowing. And Lungpo Cha's final kind of summation of years of insights and wisdom was maina, everything is uncertain. In Thai word, maina means insecure, not certain. So the knowing of sankharas is knowing of them through wisdom is that they're uncertain. This whole realm of sankharas that we see, hear, smell, taste, touch, think, feel, remember, love or hate or whatever, is its very nature is uncertain, insecure, it's changing. And the certitude lies in knowing. This knowing is not knowing about, but knowing the way it is. So like education, you go to school, to universities, colleges, to gain knowledge about. You acquire knowledge from books, texts, scriptures, teachers, internet, and there's all kinds of knowledge available, but it's acquired. Your language is an acquired ability, where knowing from pure consciousness and mindfulness, sati sampajanya panya, is natural knowing. It's universal. It's wisdom, where wisdom operates. And then it's like Lungpa Chao would emphasize, to inform with wisdom, like consciousness is natural, but then it will receive anything, delusions, madness, good, bad, the devil, the angels. It's like a movie screen, you know. It'll take whatever's projected onto it, whether it's true or false, right or wrong. But to inform, to educate with wisdom is to recognize Dhamma directly, not what you think it is or what somebody tells you. So then Dhamma is right now, isn't it? It's here and now, it's timeless. In the reflections on Dhamma, you know, one of the qualities is here and now, timeless. Can you imagine timelessness? When you think about here and now with thoughts, with perceptions, then it, you know, here and now is still you're perceiving it in terms of a time reality rather than in terms of Dhamma. So trying to grasp akalika Dhamma or timelessness with the thinking mind, it's impossible. You kind of pass over. Future is, as I was saying before the other day, is the unknown, the possibility, potential for success or failure, praise or blame, happiness or suffering. The past is a memory that arises in the present. So everything is here and now. And it's pachubana dhamma, this emphasis on pachubana dhamma, like the breathing, your body's breathing here and now. So if you're like with anapanasati, if you cultivate mindfulness of the breath, you stop thinking. You're not thinking about problems of life or the world around you, but you're suddenly just with something that's happening right now, such as the breathing of the body, the inhalation like this, the exhalation is like this. You're aware of the posture, the four postures, sitting, standing, walking, lying down, the movements of one's physical body through the day and night. You're either sitting, standing, walking, lying down. And this is, as you reflect on the body, observe the feelings, the sensations, the body through wisdom rather than through vanity or definitions of it. Identity with it is a creation, like you think this body is me, I look like this, I'm young or old, male or female, white or black or whatever. These are creations through thinking. But when we're aware, the breathing is like this, the sitting posture is like this, standing is like this, walking, lying down. These are here and now, you know. So when you're sitting, you're not, you know, this is quite a silly thing to say, but you're not standing. But you can observe the reality of sitting, you know, not you, whether your posture is a good posture, you know, whether it's, you know, whether you like the way you're sitting or whatever you're feeling, if you're sitting on a chair or on the mat. It's not about good posture, it's about just knowing sitting is like this. Standing is like this. And you begin to distance yourself from the thinking mind, which is not, which tends to, how should I walk when I'm meditating, doing Jonggrom practice? Should I walk fast or slow? And then we start trying to figure out what we should do, rather than being aware that walking is like this. Because the body is here and now, isn't it? One's physical body, wherever you are, it's here and it's now. And it's like this. And the knowing, it's like this, is not where, when it becomes personal, then you're aware of my posture, my sitting practice, what do I meditate on when I'm lying down, and the questions come, because one is seeing it in terms of me, my posture, my practice. So in Anapanasati, mindfulness of the breath, or the four postures, the asupa gamatan practices, these are all not trying to create a sense of identity, but a different way of looking at the reality of what's here and now. Because they're all sankharas. Lungpa Cha, with me, he really emphasized in the four foundations of mindfulness, the third foundation, Cittanupassana Satipatthana, and Dhammanupassana Satipatthana, the third and fourth. Because at least this is how I received his teaching, was they were talking about the states of mental states. And this was, you know, the big problem in adjusting my own personal adjusting to monastic form, to discipline, to Thai forest life, to Vinaya, to try to adapting and integrating into different culture, different environment, different everything, was the mental states, you know, the experience. I didn't just act, just willfully surrender and fit in from the beginning, but there was, you know, all kinds of emotional reactions to the limitation of that the Vinaya puts on you. And then Lungpa Cha was very strict, and we had these Tudonga practices. So the aim was to, what they called dujit, observe, know the state of mind, the mental state. Well, that which observes the mental state, if you start thinking about my mental state, then you think, you know, then you start analyzing and you start blaming the environment. You start suspecting, you know, criticizing Wat Pa Pong or Lungpa Cha, or you start feeling that, you know, you don't fit in very well, or some, you know, that you start criticizing yourself because you're not like the rest, or you can start criticizing the rest because they're not like you. There's a thinking mind. It's critical. Its function is to think and reason and logic and analysis all come from the thinking mind. But the knowing, the wisdom level, is discerning. And so Jitanupassana, the third foundation of mindfulness, mindful of mental states, is awareness of what you're feeling. Because, you know, the breath is here and now, the posture is like this. The state of mind, the mental state you're experiencing, is like this. Well, that, as you remind yourself more and more, then you're more patient with what you're feeling rather than just reactive or caught in just habit patterns of belief or rejection. So also, as I was saying yesterday, the mindfulness is not limited to a meditation retreat. And retreat gives you, you know, special conditions which are, you know, helped to develop concentration, but also not to just think of getting concentration, but cultivating this wisdom, the way things are. So people you live with, your family, the society you're living in is like this. Your wife is like this. And it's not like, it's not saying anything good or bad, but it's learning to kind of accept the way things are, rather than thinking that they should be another way, or your husband shouldn't be the way, it should be like that. And this is the thinking process. Or your mother, your father, your children, the boss in the office, you know, and has to live in a society where the critical mind really gets very active, because the ego, the sense of me and mine is based on the way I do it is, you know, people should be like this. Or they shouldn't be the way they are. Now we can be aware of that. If I have a view about somebody that they shouldn't be like this, with cittanupassana satipatthana, you know, with the awareness, do jit practice, I can be aware of my own perception of I don't they shouldn't be this way, or they should be different. And then being aware of that and actually developing path knowledge. You actually, you know, the more you observe, put yourself in the position of Bhutto rather than the personal critic, then you you're not caught in the suffering that we create around wanting people to be different than they are, or wanting criticizing oneself or the society you're in. Like when we live in Australia, it's like this. If you compare Australia to Thailand or the UK or America, then we get into, I like this better than that. Then we start analyzing one thing is better than another, or what I don't like about Australia, or what I do like, or how it should be, or shouldn't be, is the analytical thinking process. Can be quite reasonable and right or wrong, but it is conditioned phenomena that we create. Like this land here, what we call Australia, where, remember, it's human beings that named it Australia. The land itself, the continent itself, never announced it had a name. It's human beings like us. Oh, this is, we call this Australia. We call this Thailand, and so forth. So this is just to note that we're not gods, that our judgments and values are, you know, the absolute righteous ones. Just notice how the idealistic tendency to how we can create perfection with ideas, how things should be, the perfect democratic governmental system. We can imagine that. So it's completely fair and just. Equality, everything, the very best of the best. We can take, the thinking process to superlatives. But thoughts don't feel anything. They're not about, intellectual ideals, utopian ideals. The best ideals don't feel anything at all. You know, they don't have nerves. They don't, they're not sensitive. They can be beautiful, you know, like a marble statue can be sculpted into a beautiful figure, but they don't feel anything. They're not conscious forms. So that's why idealists oftentimes suffer a lot, because life just is not going to be that way. It's not going to be perfect. But it is the way it is. And in this way, then we discern with wisdom what is what is Dhamma and what is not, what is desire and non-desire, what is grasping, non-grasping. And this is, it's not saying that non-grasping is better than grasping. I mean, we would think that, you know, we might think non-grasping is what we should be, and grasping is not as good as non-grasping. That's a thinking process, but it's a wholeness that we're understanding, kind of the universality of consciousness. Everything belongs, in other words, whether we like it or not. You know, whether it's good or bad, whether it's right or wrong, because it exists, it manifests, then that's the way it is. But our relationship then within the limitation of our human form is to do good and refrain from doing bad. So, but both are of equal value in terms of wisdom. So when in the scripture, after the Buddha was enlightened, you know, they have where Mara, the evil forces, the tempter, tries to tempt the Buddha. Let's see if he's really a Buddha or not, whether I can delude him. The Buddha doesn't tell Mara to go away, or to, he doesn't shoot him or punch him in the nose. He says, "I know you, Mara." So it's knowing. It's knowing. It's not like annihilating or getting rid of Mara, but knowing. Knowing with wisdom, then we, you know, our nature is, with wisdom, then there is compassion. There is metta. The four Brahma-viharas manifest through this metta, karuna, mudita, upeka. They're spontaneous. Like metta and upeka are paramitas. Metta is the very basis of consciousness. Accepts everything. Consciousness doesn't deny anything. It's not about approving of everything either. It's not, but it's non-hatred, non-aversion. Things are what they are, and then with wisdom, then we see that even the good or the bad in terms of what it really is. It's a sankhara, rising, ceasing according to other conditions. So how can you control all the conditions of the universe? You know, we're pretty helpless when it comes to that. Then direct the sun, moon, stars, and the planets, and the solar system, and everybody in the world to do good and refrain from doing bad, but we can do that ourselves. This is what we can do when we want to help the society or help the world that we live in, is know what we can actually do within the limitation of the forms we're in at during this lifetime is like this. This we can do every moment. Whether we can help in ways like establishing a better government or more fair rules and helping the society to become better, fairer, more just, free, then we do that, you know, so we can, you know, if we have political interests or social interests, it doesn't, we don't stop there. We don't stop at just ourselves, but we can operate with wisdom rather than with just the idealism that tends to lead towards disappointment and despair. So like social activism, these human rights issues and so forth, you know, it's not, if we're too idealistic about it, we're going to be disappointed or indignant, angry. But if we have wisdom, then more and more our influence, you know, how we react and what we do, our active side in the society has more power, more depth to it, and more clear direction rather than just criticizing things and feeling frustrated because people don't agree with us or things aren't, you know, going the way we want them to. And then Tamanu Pasana Saripatthana is actually using the Four Noble Truths, the dependent origination, these are, you know, it's a developing Dhamma language and insight into these Four Noble Truths. I did a lot of meditation on Paticca Samuppada, on the dependent origination. For 2 years I just kept pursuing that till I had the insight from it. But these, learning how to use these teachings, the four stages, the ten fetters, all these things in the Theravada scripture, Pali scripture, looked like an inventory. If you know, you get more inspiration from other sources, but they're actually very useful in meditation. Because it's really taking like the five khandhas or the six ayatanas and the four efforts and on like this. These all are helpful in our reflecting on the way things are. And then the Four Noble Truths, taking the experience of suffering and just using that's like the key to the door. It in itself is a sankhara, but it but it's through learning to look at suffering from the wisdom position rather than from the personal love and hate attitudes that we have towards it. So in the four foundations of mindfulness, the Saripatthana, the Gayanupassana, Vedananupassana, these Gayanupassana, Vedananupassana, if you're a skeptic, critical person, sometimes, like Lumpacha emphasized with me, Jitanupassana, Tamanupassana. And I found, you know, that was really, I could do that in where because I'm such a, my character is a think is a kind of obsessed thinking, skeptical nature. And so you take the way you are, you know, not to try to suppress it or change it, but to use it with this wisdom. So I stop here, and since this is the last meeting, tomorrow I'll be leaving Wat Buddha Dhamma. Certainly appreciate my time here. Ajahn Kemavaro has been very hospitable, very kind to me, as you all have. So you have my blessing, my best wishes.